You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Ewan Murray.
And welcome to the Race to Dubai show, where we'll be reflecting on yet another European Tour event won by an American. This time, Dustin Johnson at the inaugural Saudi International powered by SBIA.
I hit the shots that I needed to, you know, at the right times, and, you know, I hit some really nice shots coming down the stretch. So pleased, obviously, with the outcome. Not as pleased with the way I played. I felt like I should have played a lot better, but very, very pleased with the win.
Hao Tong Li showed he could mix it with DJ before ultimately having to settle for second place.
Very good match, and especially front nine being played really good. Yeah, back nine just a little bit off, but I learned a lot and very happy to finish solo second this week.
Englishman Tom Lewis finished third, and we'll speak to him shortly as we review the best of the action, and we'll also look ahead to the next event, the ISPS Handa Vic Open. I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by former professional golfer, now commentator, Ewan Murray. Ewan, how are you?
I'm in great shape, and it's good to be alongside you once again.
What have you made to the start of the calendar year so far from a golfing point of view? Been some big wins for some big players.
Definitely, and I think that will continue throughout the course of 2019. There's a lot of good players up there currently.
Dustin Johnson winning the inaugural Saudi International, powered by SBIA, by two strokes to claim a sixth European Tour title. Technically, it was his first non-major, non-WGC. Had we forgotten about Dustin a little bit? Because we've seen Brooks, of course, win a couple of majors and rise to world number one. We've seen Justin Rose play so well recently, Bryson DeChambeau coming to the fore. DJ has just reminded us what a fantastic player he is.
For sure. You get Dustin Johnson in top form, and he's always going to be up there contending. But you'll be saying what you've just said for the next 8 months, I think, because that world number one position, I think, will chop and change throughout the season.
In terms of the race for world number one, we'll rattle through the rankings a little bit later for the show, on the show. Is it better that we've got two, three, four players jostling for top spot? Or was it better when we had someone like Tiger Woods dominate and we could say, yeah, well, this is the best player of this particular generation?
Well, he was the best player of that generation, no doubt about it. But he had three times the points of the nearest challenger. Now you have the likes of Johnson and Koepka, you mentioned, Justin Rose up there at number one. Got Ricky Fowler, who's come back to form. And I think you're going to see a lot of chopping and changing. And that's more exciting than one player dominating.
Well, DJ is inching towards top spot. Not there quite yet. We'll get to the world rankings shortly. The American shot a final round, 3 under par 67, 5 birdies, 2 bogeys, to finish ahead of playing partner Hao Tong Li on 19 under. Tom Lewis, as we mentioned, was back in third. I saw a poll on the European Tour Twitter feed going into the final round, and it was asking listeners, Twitter followers, to predict who might win between Dustin Johnson and Hao Tong Li, because we thought it might be a battle between those two. We didn't realise that Tom Lewis was going to start so well. And it was 50-50 between those Twitter followers, 50% saying Hao Tong Li, 50% saying Dustin Johnson. Is that because people have started to realise what a good player Hao Tong Li is? It seems strange to me because I thought, well, DJ's got to be the favourite here.
You would think that, and if you look at the world ranking, you would think that. But Hao Tong had played extremely well the week before at the Emirates Club in Dubai, and a little unlucky not to take that title. He was defeated by some brilliant golf from Bryson DeChambeau. So that doesn't come as a great surprise to me. Plus the fact the year before, Hao Tong had set a new record in Dubai at 23 under par. And that record had stood for 17 years when Thomas Bjorn won. So he is a strong contender for a top five place in the world ranking. And how wonderful that would be for China.
And he doesn't back away when he plays against the best, because you mentioned that event in Dubai, took on Rory McIlroy and beat him. He seems to have, you know, he's a gregarious character, isn't he? He's a player that doesn't mind mixing it and sharing the spotlight with the best in the world.
I've known him since he was 13. And most 13-year-olds are quite shy. Hao Tong wasn't shy at 13. And he was mentored by an Irish PGA professional who made his way over to China. And I think he made a big difference to him, because it was a very important stage of his life. It was planning for the future. And it was all planned perfectly. And he just got bigger. He got stronger. And, of course, with good results, more confident.
Second place in Saudi behind DJ. What did you make of the course, the Royal Greens Golf and Country Club in King Abdullah Economic City? Not been played before, obviously. DJ rattled up the course record with a 61. There was a fair few 62s as well. The greens seemed huge and an awful lot of undulations. Is this a course that we'll see over the next few years be one of the favourites to players? Is it a bit too easy? What were your thoughts?
No, it's a course that will develop. It's only 18 months old, so you couldn't get the greens up at, say, 12 on the stimp meter. They were just over 10, I think, for the final 2 days. And when you've got undulations in the green and you add speed into that, then you add a tremendous amount of difficulty. Also, it needs to grow up a little. The trees, the palm trees were all obviously planted. Once they fill out and they add one or two more and give some definition to the fairways, I think it will become quite a good test. But all in all, it was a very successful inaugural Saudi International Open.
Houghton Lee did get his nose in front over the course of the first nine. DJ birdied the second, then Lee birdied 4 and 9. They both bogeyed the 10. At that stage, DJ, we've seen falter over the course of the last 18 months in big events, but I think there were some key holes down the stretch. He birdied 11 and 12, and although he found water on 16, he seems to be always have that ability to make those mistakes only bogeys rather than doubles or triples on his card.
That's down to his temperament, I think, quite a lot. Whether Dustin Johnson's shooting 78 or 61, he's exactly the same. He walks at the same pace, which means his mind probably operates at the same pace. He was fortunate because Houghton had a bad patch just after the turn and he had a good patch, so that turned things on its head. But for me, the turning point was that the bogey four, 16, he went over to the drop zone, was very keen to say, is this where I should be dropping after what happened at the US Open at Oakmont 3 years ago? And he was just calm, popped it in there, didn't go for the flag second time round with the wedge, with his third shot, but got it within range of 10 feet. And once he popped that in, you really felt he would close it out.
Putted with the pin out over the course of the week, DJ. What do we make of this in-out?
Well, everyone's going to be different. Bryson DeChambeau putts with it from 6 feet, and he's worked it all out, and I guarantee he will have worked it all out. And he reckons that with a pin in, if the ball strikes the pin or the edge of the hole, he's going to hole more putts than he would with the pin out. Others, like Dustin, no, I want the pin out. And I think it's just a preference. I don't think there's any advantage whether it's in or out.
So it doesn't take any skill away from measuring these long putts and, you know, on fast greens. I mean, I know they weren't fast in Saudi, but when you get to US Open greens and you think, crikey, I've just got to tickle this one down or it's going to go 8-10 feet past, does it take any of the skill away if you leave the pin in?
No, but I think you'll find more will leave the pin in once the greens get up to a speed of 12 and a half, 13, as they do in the US Open. But that remains to be seen. It's worked for Bryson, and pin out worked for Dustin last week.
Saw Adam Scott as well, didn't we, in the States? He seems to put with a pin in, even if it's, you know, 12 inches away, he'll keep it in. And I don't know if he putted better, but the results were better for him.
For sure. The one thing that I've been thinking about is the 72nd green at Augusta National. And when you think Dustin Rose and Garcia went head-to-head a couple of years ago in 17 there, would someone have a putt from 4 or 5 feet leave the pin in? Because it doesn't quite fit.
It'd be interesting to see what happens. Just on DJ and Bryson, I mean, we've just had two winners on the European Tour, both American players, both in the world top five, both fantastic performers, but both play the game so differently. It's astonishing, really, isn't it?
It is. In Dubai, in the final round, Bryson DeChambeau had 3 times over 1:40. Now, that's a minute plus too long. Television directors sometimes miss the pre-shot routine of Johnson because he's ready to go. He's worked it all out while his playing partner is hitting his shot, and he's usually playing last because of the distance he hits it off the tee. But he's ready to go when it's his turn. Other players aren't. That's the difference between slow and fast.
With Bryson, one of the pre-shot routines from last week was put up on Twitter, and a lot of people were applauding the fact that, you know, prepare to fail, and so on and so forth. And a lot of Twitter people came back and said, well, hang on, it's taking far too long here. It caused a fairly big stir, probably went beyond golf. DJ doesn't so much. In terms of promoting the game, is that a bad thing that we're looking at something that is bad for the game of golf, or is it better because at least we're getting some headlines outside of the game of golf, if you see what I'm getting at?
As long as the good headlines.
But he's more of a talking point, isn't he, Bryson, at the moment, than DJ?
He is, because he's different, and I applaud that. I thought his golf in Dubai was some of the finest I've seen, and whatever he does in his scientific mind, his scientific world, then it's working for him. A tremendous strike rate over the last 18 months for DeChambeau. Johnson sees it differently, and I know what you're getting at when he said, I look at the yardage, I pick the club,
yeah,
I hit the ball.
Yeah,
it's really not that
yeah,
difficult.
Exactly.
You take that to Bryson's world and it's, well, hang on, you haven't scratched the surface yet. You know, I've got another couple of minutes to go before we find out about pressurisation and things like that.
Do you think we might see golfers start to copy what Bryson does, or at least attempt to?
I don't mind them copying that if they're within the rules. We had a big revamp of the rules on the 1st of January, and that was in general to make things simple and speed up play. Bryson does not speed up play. Dustin does. So some will look at Dustin and say, that's the way I want to play. Some will look at Bryson and say, well, he's got something. Maybe I should look into this. So I'm pretty sure youngsters will try and understand the thought process of Bryson DeChambeau, and some might go down that route.
Be interesting to see what happens with Bryson. And we talk about the length of the clubs as well. Are golf manufacturers missing a trick here? Do you think they're going to start producing sets of clubs that are all the same length?
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
But the better he gets, the more publicity he gets, Bryson?
Oh, for sure. And he's a thoroughly decent chap. There's no doubt about that. I think he's very good for the game. It's good that he's successful. He's young. It's the next era coming through. And, of course, there'll be a few in their teens right now are coming in behind him. So they will have an influence on the youngsters. It remains what that influence will be.
Well, DJ does claim the victory. And as we mentioned previously, Johnson's first win in a regular European Tour event, previous five in either majors or WGCs. He's got 11 official worldwide wins since the beginning of 2016, the most of any player in that span. We can hear from the American next, who says he was pleased to get over the line.
You know, it was pretty close all day. Felt like, you know, neither one of us had our best stuff out there today. You know, even Tom kind of put a little pressure on us too. But, you know, I felt like I was playing well. I just wasn't, you know, I was just missing the fairways. And, you know, this golf course is tough if you're playing from the rough. But I hit the shots that I needed to, you know, at the right times, and, you know, I hit some really nice shots coming down the stretch. So I'm pleased, obviously, with the outcome. Not as pleased with the way I played. I think I felt like I should have played a lot better, but very, very pleased with the win. I feel like I'm swinging it very well. I'm hitting, you know, quality golf shots, and, you know, I'm pleased with where the game is, you know, heading into a big stretch that I got coming up.
That was Dustin Johnson, who scores after Bryson DeChambeau won the previous week. We've had Kurt Kitayama and David Lipsky as well win. American golf is in fairly decent nick worldwide at the moment, it would appear. I mean, you've got two strands of Americans on the European Tour. I guess you've got the big names, the big hitters that come over for the big events. But you've got this route that Brooks took initially and Peter Uihlein did as well, and you've got one or two more coming and plying their trade on the European Tour, and it seems to be working out for a few of them.
It's working out for everyone, and a lot of that is down to the Rolex Series, the eight tournaments that are worth just under $60 million. If Americans can't get on the PGA Tour, and of course it's very difficult to do that, they can come to the qualifying school here, and if they're successful, then they can ply their trade and maybe push their way into these events. So it's very attractive for not just Americans, but players all over the world, and I think that's one of Keith Pelley's great moves since he joined the tour. That very quietly he pushed these in and said, look, we're going to have these special events. And at the end of it, you know, as a European, why would you need to go and play anywhere else?
Time to get the thoughts of the runner-up, Hao Tong Li.
Very good match, and especially front nine being played really good. Back nine just a little bit off. And I mean, just like I said, it wasn't my best over there today again. But I learned a lot, and especially that last few holes was good for me.
And of course, you had another chip in on nine. That was a good way to finish with nine holes.
Yeah, for sure. Because like I said, being in last a couple of days, the game wasn't being that solid. And always, iron always pulled left. as you can see. So, yeah, very pleased I can play like this with that boss record.
Overall, you must be happy with your performance to come second.
Yeah, for sure, because when I had that four holes left, I looked at the leaderboard. I was dropped to third place and very happy to finish solo second this week.
And he gets all the cash as well this week because, obviously, the previous week he was done by that penalty. I'll ask your thoughts on that in just a second. But just a Twitter reflection from Hao Tong. He says, really pleased with the way that I played this week in second spot. Congratulations, Dustin Johnson, on the win. Next event for me will be the WGC Mexico. Thank you for all the messages over the last 7 days. He's good enough to mix it with the world's best, isn't he, Ewan? You mentioned that previously.
Definitely. And I think you'll find at the end of this season, he'll be comfortably inside the top 10 of the world rankings. I said earlier how important that would be for golf in China and for world golf. So he's the Pied Piper right now, and the rest will follow, and they won't be far behind him.
What did you make of the situation last week in Dubai with the ruling that went against him? I mean, to the letter of the law, it was right, but the European Tour came in for a little bit of stick. I mean, it was so close. You needed a bit of VAR, I think, didn't you, really, there? Because by the time he stands and takes his stand, I mean, the caddy's almost moving away.
I will say that John Paramore spent 2 days with the players, the caddies, the television crew in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and explained how this rule was going to work. I thought it was harsh, but it was exactly the way John had set it out to the players, the caddies, and the TV commentators. What gets me in this situation, and the caddy was in no way lining him up, but the rule now says, as you begin to take your stance, rather than having taken it, why is the line allowed on the golf ball? That should have been done on the 1st of January, because it's an aid. You look at these players on the range, and they have two fiberglass sticks to help them with alignment. That's not allowed in the golf course. So why is the line? The other thing we mentioned earlier, they're keen to speed the game up, and they've said 40 seconds is long enough to play any shot. And Bryson has three terrible times in Dubai. Now, if you're going to penalise Hao Tong Lee, which was correct, harsh, definitely, but it was correct. If you're going to penalise him, you have to go and have a word with Bryson at the fifth. His second shot from the fairway, a 9-iron, 150-odd yards, very straightforward, 1:47. Now, he should have been warned then to say, sorry, Bryson, that's too long. You're going to have to speed that up. And then the other two may not have happened. But if you're going to give Hao Tong the penalty, you have to look at the other things as well.
What is the process then? A warning first and then a penalty, a shot?
I think there would have been some leeway because the rules were new. And I think the referee would have gone up and said, look, we've got this 40-second rule. You were quite a long way over that, a minute to be exact. It's too long, Bryson, so be careful, because next time it's not going to be a warning. And then I don't think it will happen.
There's always a suggestion amongst golf fans that the bigger name players are not going to get this penalty, but potentially there's going to be a situation where it's a lesser light and they will go after that particular player.
Well, the other sad thing about that is the lesser lights are not seen on the television coverage. The big names in contention are, so the spotlight is on them, and it could well be happening on the other side of the golf course. But if they change rules, they really have to implement them, and implement them quickly, early in the season. If anyone's done something wrong, I would have said over the first month, you'll get away with that.
Yeah.
But never again.
But you could almost, you know, set the standard, can't you? If you penalise someone quite early on and you penalise a big name player, that sends the message out from here on in that no one's going to get away with it.
For sure, but then what message does it send out to someone who takes 1:40 to hit the shot and he's not penalised?
Absolutely. I'm talking about the fact that maybe you should have penalised Bryson straight away, because now people can just say, well, what about what happened 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, if they, you know, fall foul of the rule?
Yeah, I spoke to Jamie Donaldson in commentary about this, and Jamie said that inconsistency is what the players don't like. You have J.B. Holmes, 4.5 minutes.
Oh, that was incredible.
Yeah, and the tour do absolutely nothing about it, and then come out and say, it's fine, it's not a problem. Well, it is a problem, and it was a problem for Alex Norton, because it took away a little bit of the chance he had of winning that event. It's not just about the player taking a long time. It's not courteous to the people you're playing alongside. There are quick players, there's slow players. What we have to do is bring them closer together.
the situation with JB Holmes, of course, with the Farmers, wasn't it, last year on the PGA Tour with Alex Noren, the event that Jason Day eventually went to win. He went to a playoff, went to the following day, in fact, didn't he? But it was unbelievable to watch or not watch JB Holmes play as it was when he was, I think it was the last hole, wasn't it, over water, just going back and forth.
Well, you have a practice round, you have a pro-am. He's already had three rounds, so this is the sixth time he's playing.
Yeah, he knows the hole.
I mean, what does he need? Does he need a painting of it to say, look, there is water over there? And I'm not criticising JB just as him. There are slow players out there. There have been slow players down the years. If they've changed the rules and revamped them, as they did at the beginning of this year, they really have to implement them.
There's going to be more discussion on rules, I would wager, over the course of the next few weeks and months. No doubt about that. Just finally on Hao Tong Lee, he made European Tour history during the third round when he became the first player to record three eagles on par fours in the same round. He also became the first player to make four eagles in the same round since 2007. I mean, he just didn't need his putter for a number of holes, did he? He was just lobbing in from all sorts. It's an incredible display from Hao Tong. He's that type of player. He's aggressive, isn't he? He goes for the pins all the time.
He does, and he's only interested in winning. A lot of youngsters down the years would look in a situation he's been in and say, well, if I can just keep going here, finish inside the top five, make a big check. He's a totally different mix.
Does that hamper or help his prospects of winning a major? Have you got to be a bit more patient? Have you got to play a different way? Does it depend on the course? When you look at what we've got coming up this year at Portrush or Bethpage or Pebble, and obviously, because, I mean, is that good or bad that he's aggressive and single-minded?
No, I think if you're centred on winning, you're going to perform at your very best. And you know, there's so many good players around now. Just because you have that attitude, it doesn't mean you're going to win a lot. You're actually going to lose a lot. But if you keep that belief that you can go ahead and take the shots on, like Mickelson did at Augusta back in 2010 from the woods at 13, there are times in a round where you have to take a chance because there's so many good players. So I think it's very refreshing. A youngster, and he is a youngster, has got this type of attitude to tournament golf.
Well, as we said, Tom Lewis finished a shot behind Hao Tong Lee in third, and I'm delighted to say that the Englishman joins us now on the Race to Dubai show. I was watching on TV, Tom, and when you started with five straight birdies, I thought, crikey, you could catch them here. Did you have the same feeling?
Yeah, for sure. You never know what's going to happen on a Sunday. Obviously, people like Hao Tong and Dustin have been in that position much more than me, so I'm sure that they could have handled it. But five birdies is hard to handle. I'm sure that they probably did have a little look over their shoulder at some point. But unfortunately, it just didn't happen for me at the end.
Quite a weekend, nevertheless, Tom. 62-65 to finish off with.
Yeah, it's really nice. I think if someone said to me on Thursday you could finish third and you were going to finish 16 under par, I would have been like, yeah, OK, I'll sit in the clubhouse for 3 days. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Tom, what's the difference now to the dark period you went through in between your first and second victory?
You know, it's such a fine line. I really couldn't put it down to just one thing. It's a lot of aspects. I think when I was younger, I got everything early and probably didn't understand or respect what I was doing. And I think the lows definitely matured me as a person. And golf-wise, I haven't really. The exciting thing is, I haven't really felt like I've been on my A game. That's the best bit about it. Last week was definitely more along them lines. The last couple of rounds, I started to actually hit it very well. That's more my strength is my long game. Over the last maybe 6 to 9 months, my putting's definitely improved. Me and my caddy John Bell, we've read greens at the same pace. We always read putts, you know, 1 foot past, if that's the pace we're going to hit it. And I've definitely held a few more putts, whether that's been for birdies on par fives or par saves. And I think that's probably made a big difference of keeping me there at the weekend.
Make sure he doesn't stand behind you, Tom, when you're lining up your putts. What have you made of the rule changes? Everyone's talking about them. Is it something that obviously you've been across? Have you been chatting amongst your peers about it? What are your thoughts?
You know, it's always a difficult one. Like, rules are rules, and sometimes common sense is not used enough, I don't think. And we all can obviously see that there's been some harshness to some of the rules and some of the guys being lined up. And I don't see the real need of that sort of rule, in my opinion. We're trying to speed up the game at the end of the day, and the player's still got to hit the shot. And if someone tells you where you're lining up and still got to still got to hit, you know, you still got to pull the trigger, and you got to do, you got to feel it yourself. So personally, I've never been someone that's needed someone to line me up. Some players have, some players haven't, but obviously we can see from the footage that, you know, I think common sense says that neither of them have been lined up in the US or in Europe.
I think talking to some of the players, Tom, the thing that frustrates them more is the inconsistencies in rules, not just the new rules, but the way it's been for the last few years.
Yeah, well, you know, I think sometimes you've got to stick to things, and I think that they try and change them too much a little bit, you know, and I don't know, maybe try and listen to some of the players a little bit more. And I don't follow it too much, to be honest with you. I try and get on with it and just try and stick to what I know. You know, you can go into a bit too in depth, and sometimes the simplest things in life are the best. And I think that sometimes the rules of golf are just too complicated and not very easy to follow.
Just back on your third place finish, what did you make of the course out in Saudi? It looked good from a televisual point of view, looked quite interesting, looked a little bit easy. I'm over-egging it a little bit there. What are your thoughts?
It was nice for me. It suited me. It was like Portugal. It's a course that I think if you hit it well, you definitely got an advantage there. The greens are obviously fresh, so they weren't running too smoothly. And I think that you could probably tell on telly that there's probably a few mystery putts. But at the end of the day, it's a brand new golf course. The course setup's brilliant. The Golf Federation did a brilliant job with running the event. I had a great time. I've really enjoyed it over there, and hopefully we can spend a few more years over there. I really enjoyed the place.
Meteoric rise in a very short space of time, Tom, and heading towards the top 50 in the world rankings. So I guess you'll have to look at your schedule from here to the end of the season.
Yeah, I've obviously got plan A and plan B. Plan A is obviously just focus on Europe and try and do as best I can. And obviously having a ninth place finish and a third place finish has really pushed me from, I don't know what it was, 70 to sort of 55. And obviously you've always got in the back in mind the Masters. But realistically, the best thing for me getting into the Masters is obviously playing the WGCs. And I think I really don't know what's going to happen with Mexico. I don't really know the status for me really about getting in, but I know that I'm very close. I might miss out, but if I can get the World Match Play, that will give me a great, you know, that will give me a great schedule going into April, and hopefully I can push myself into the Masters. And the good thing about it is I'm playing well, and I can probably go into them events with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, it looks like potentially you are going to be in the Match Play. It must be difficult because you're on the cusp of making your schedule very different, aren't you, I guess?
Yeah, but, you know, it's exciting as well. It's not, you know, it's a good thing to have, and I'm really, really pleased with the way I've performed in the last 6 months. And sometimes, you know, good play gets rewarded, and obviously that's what's been happening with me, and I'm pleased. You know, it's very big thing for me was my season really started in September, so starting in January, most people see that as a new season. I'm kind of seeing it as a continuation of last season, and my season pretty much stops in September, so I'm just carrying on the form, and if I can continue to do that, then hopefully for the better my schedule can change a little bit.
No doubt about that. Well, we really enjoyed watching you out in the Gulf, and hopefully things will go to plan over the course of 2019. Tom, many thanks for popping on the Race to Dubai show. We'll speak again soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Cheers, guys.
Now, also in Saudi Arabia, one or two of the players that performed well. 20-year-old Australian Minwoo Lee finished fourth in just his second event as a professional. A new name on me. I don't know if you know anything about Minwoo Lee, but the Australian's certainly producing one or two, well, more than one or two good players at the moment, Ewan.
As they have done down the years, some great golfers have come from that part of the world. Some of the finest golf courses in the world are down there in Australia. I was thrilled. This is his second professional event, €150,000.
That'll do.
So that's the size of it. But the fact that very quickly in his career, he feels he's part of tours. He's part of a tour. He feels he's strong enough to go ahead and win, given that performance. No shame in the three players that were ahead
Absolutely.
Of him. Top players and players who have won more than one tournament. So at 20 years of age, just fantastic.
Now, Bryson DeChambeau tied sixth. and that means he now owns the longest under par streak on either the European or PGA Tour since 2003 with 26. To put that into some context, Tiger's longest under par streak was 17 rounds. Another strong week for Ian Poulter as well. Tied sixth, tied third, tied sixth in his last three tournaments. One in Houston, of course, last year to get into the Masters and played his part on the Ryder Cup team. Are we seeing Poults getting back to something like his best? Is this the consistency that has maybe been lacking over the last few years?
Every player goes through downtimes. It doesn't matter how good you are. We've seen that down the years. They lose form. That happened to Ian a couple of years ago. Then the Players' Championship in Sawgrass changed all that, finishing second there, and he got his money. He was back playing on the PGA Tour full-time with all the playing privileges. I'm amazed at Ian. That was five tournaments in a row. He had a couple over in Hawaii and then to the Middle East.
It's a long haul, isn't it?
It is a long haul. And to bring that quality of golf that he showed at the end of last year, sixth, third, sixth, is a good return. And it takes him quite well up the race to Dubai. It takes him into the top 10 there. So a great start for Poulter. And of course, now he'll concentrate on the early part of the PGA Tour.
Positive for Poults, a negative for Sergio Garcia, who was disqualified from the tournament for something deemed serious misconduct during his third round. The Spaniard became the first player on the European Tour to be disqualified under Rule 1.2a, which reads, players are expected to play in the spirit of the game by acting with integrity, showing consideration to others, and taking good care of the course. From what I know, he's damaged some greens. I've not seen any pictures of damaged greens. I don't know if you can shed any further light on the story. The only pictures I've seen are of Sergio having a bit of a tantrum in a bunker. I think he believed that the bunker wasn't raked properly, and then he failed to get out of the bunker with his first. He actually got up and down for the par, wasn't very happy, and then something later on in the round is obviously something's gone off in his head again. But, I mean, this is fairly unacceptable, I would imagine.
It is unacceptable. The bunker problem started on Saturday, so there was obviously a darkness in the mood before Sunday where he damaged five greens. Some with his feet, some with the club, but totally and utterly unacceptable. But golfers are like everyone else. They have bad days. They have things going on in their head that they can't get out. They can't keep the concentration going in the game. We saw it with Tiger Woods spitting in the 12th green in Dubai a few years back.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. We've seen Garcia spitting the cap at the 13th at...
Was that Doral?
Doral.
Yeah.
Before all that was revamped, there was a penalty for that as well. And we've seen Mickelson have a complete head-off at Shinnecock Hills. None of them have got any place in the game, but they're human, these lads, and it does happen. What Sergio did, he'll be thoroughly ashamed of, especially his father as a professional golfer. He's been brought up as a professional golfer since he was a young lad, and he'll be totally ashamed of what he did for some time to come.
Well, the former Masters champion has said that I respect the decision of my disqualification in frustration. I damaged a couple of greens for which I apologise for, and I have informed my fellow players it will never happen again. Now, world number one, Justin Rose, missed the cut for just the second time in 36 events. The Englishman didn't feature over the weekend in Saudi after rounds of 70 and 72. That was too many to make the weekend. He's just come off the back of a win on the PGA Tour. Maybe just an event too much for him, Ewan.
Yes, busy time, like Ian Poulter, flying all over the place. But of course, Ian Poulter played in Abu Dhabi
in
Dubai.
Do it.
But then he was acclimatised to be playing in Saudi. Justin wasn't, and that's an astonishing record. Second missed cut in 36, quite something.
We need the top 10, Ewan, from the events in Saudi on the European Tour.
There was a big tie in sixth place. Bryson DeChambeau, we've talked about earlier there. Ryan Fox, the ever-improving Ryan Fox from New Zealand. Scott Hend, the Australian, and Jos Lantin is back on form after his injury problems over the last 2 years. Ian Poulter joined them in tied sixth place. Into the top five, a promising finish for the Frenchman, Alexander Levy. Lee Min-woo earned fourth on his own, €152,000. Just let me get that spot on. Imagine that at 20 years of age. Tom Lewis, a valiant effort, brilliant start to the final round with five birdies there. 62-65 over the weekend for Tom. But it gives you an indication of the class you're up against now on the European Tour. Haitong Li in second, and with a two-shot win, it was the former world number one, Dustin Johnson.
Just mention that money again, $150,000 for the young Australian. And whenever I talk to former footballers who just missed out on the Premier League era, they always, nearly to a man, are very bitter about how football has gone. Are golfers the same? You seem a bit more intelligent. Do you belie the fact that suddenly it's gone a little bit turbo in terms of prize money?
Oh, I don't think so. When I turned pro in 1971, the European Tour was just beginning. They had a few founder members. The late John Jacobs was obviously very much a big man at that time. But the total prize money for the first season was $1 million.
for every single player.
But no, I'm not bitter because these days were good. This was the beginning of the European Tour. And everyone who played at that time still feels very much part of the European Tour, and thrilled that it's gone on to bigger and greater things. And it's a wonderful tour now, with the addition of the Rolex Series, the four World Golf Championships, the four majors. If I was a European, I would just play on the European Tour, because you have a great chance of having a very successful career.
Of course, one player from yesteryear who always moans about the money is your friend and mine, Richard Boxall, who always says, well, I have run a Rolex event, but I haven't won the money to go with it, because he did win the Italian Open.
You know, Richard's still got half of that check anyway, and it was all the way back in 1990.
Now then, last week's predictions. Reminder of the format. We get two picks each. One, though, has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race to Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. Now, last week, I thought I was on safe ground here, Ewan, going for Justin Rose. He misses the cut for only the second time in 30-odd events, so that was minus 5.
Well, it serves you right. I mean, you go for the world's number one player. I mean, talk about sitting in the fence.
Well, I thought I was on safe ground. And I went for Joost Luiten as well, who is out of the top 50 from last year because he had injury issues, of course. So I think he's going to be a player that a lot of people pick over the course of this year when you're looking for someone outside of the top 50. He was tied 6, so that gets me 5 points. So that's a 0. John Hawksworth did spectacularly well. He picked out Eddie Pepperell, who missed the cut, and Thomas Aitken, who missed the cut. So that's minus 10 for the man that you're following today.
That's actually a big improvement for Hawksworth. And they didn't miss the cut by much.
No, they didn't. Only plus 6 for Eddie. Jack Haywood was our third member of the pod last week. And the Golfing World producer went for Pat Reed, who was 56, 0 points. And Andrew Johnston, who did not play in the end. He's made his way to Australia. So 0 points for Jack. It means that the overall scoreboard looks like this. Presenters on 65, so I've not done any worse for Rob, who always gives me a bit of grief for not adding to his tally. Co-presenters are on 10. Ewan, you've got to help your team this week. The guests are on 0.
I wondered why I was invited back. And that's obviously the reason.
We're going to get your picks for this week's event shortly. In the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, Pat Keown's Kerry Villa team topped the global leaderboard with 5,192 points. John Parsons topped the weekly standings with Haitong Li as his captain alongside Tom Lewis, Joost Luiten and Bryson DeChambeau. If you want to get involved, you can do by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. What about the Race 2 Dubai? Give us the top 10 of the current standings, Ewan.
You are working me hard this morning.
That's why you're here.
Ian Poulter's into the top 10 with that fine run you were talking about. Haitong's runner-up place takes him into 9th. And he's just behind Aaron Rye, who of course won in Hong Kong. Joost Luiten in 7th. David Lipsky from the United States in 6th. And into the top 5, Matt Wallace, who's made a promising start to the year. Lou Oosthuizen from South Africa's in 4th. 3rd is Bryson. 2nd is Richard Stoney. But leading the way after that brilliant victory in Abu Dhabi, Ireland's Shane Lowry.
Now, moving on to the PGA Tour, American Ricky Fowler lost a 4-shot lead in a bizarre incident at the Phoenix Open, but recovered to win the event. I'll get your thoughts on this one, Ewan. A Fowler chip on the 11th went into the water. He took a drop, eventually placed the ball. He walked up to survey the green, turned back, and the ball had rolled back into the hazard, which forced him to take another drop, so another penalty. He then found the green, put it in for a triple bogey, but dropped a shot as well on the 12th. Just get your thoughts on that situation. I mean, again, by the letter of the law, it's correct, but I felt desperate for him. Have you seen that before?
Once he's blessed the ball, it's in
that's
play.
That's it.
So then if it trickles off,
yeah,
it's in play and it's now in the
and
water.
And that's it.
And we've now got another problem with penalty shots. But
have you seen that before?
Yes. Yes, I have seen incidents like that before. Possibly not with a leader on a final day. I looked at Ricky Fowler's face and I thought, he's probably thinking this is not going to be my day.
Well, he's blown leads before the Phoenix, hasn't he? Last season and a few years ago.
He has. And I thought the front nine in the weather conditions, I think he was out in 37. I thought that was quite reasonable given the lead he had.
No one was really putting any pressure on him, were they?
No, because the weather wasn't really good enough for anyone to have a 63 or a 64. So he'd be thinking, if I can get myself round here in par, I'm going to be extremely difficult to beat. And then, of course, he has that problem at 11. But all credit to him. He buckled down, he put that at the back of his mind and hit some super shots over the course of the last half dozen holes. He'll be a very popular winner, as you say. He's had chances and not really crossed the line when he should have done. And maybe that will push him now into thinking that it's time he became a major champion.
Brandon Grace was the player that briefly led. He was playing in the group, I think, behind, with Ricky playing alongside Matt Kuchar and Justin Thomas. I was surprised that neither Thomas or Kuchar could do a little bit better on that final day. I know the conditions were against them a little bit, but when the leader, who's got a habit of bottling it, shall we say, especially at in Phoenix, I was a bit disappointed with him. Especially Thomas, you know, he's started strongly and he's a fantastic player.
Yes, he is. And Brandon Grace is a fantastic player as well because he came from the pack rather than the nearest challengers. What surprised me was Grace's T-shirt at 17. I'm not absolutely sure why you'd take that on in these conditions. You know, leave yourself...
I guess it's what they naturally do, though, isn't it? It's that hole that they always try and...
Well, the pin's set way in the back of the green. If they do hit the ball onto the green with pace, there's problems at the back of that green as well. So I was a bit surprised for a multi-winner like Grace. I was surprised he took the driver off the tee, given the fact he was in the matches ahead as well. He had the chance to post the score that may have been difficult to match for Fowler.
Finished on 17 under in the end. 3 over par, final round of 74. Grace finished second on 15 under. A triple bogey and a double bogey in the round for Ricky. First time since 1983 that someone has done that in the final round and managed to win. I mean, you usually got to keep those big numbers off your scoreboard.
Well, that also gives you an indication of how difficult a day it was.
And he had a decent lead going into the final day as well, didn't he?
He did.
Led by four. Top European finishes, Russell Knox and John Rahm, both tied for 10th. Tyrrell Hatton was never quite sure if this was going to be his event, but he did all right in 15th spot. We've talked about the 16th at Scottsdale over the last few years. Well, more than that. I mean, it's just grown into something extraordinary. Are you a fan, Ewan? Has it got a place in golf for you?
For 1 week a season, maybe. I wouldn't like to see that every week. The Made in Denmark event.
They've tried to do something similar, haven't they?
Very well supported, and I think it's the par 3 16th as well there. I've naturally covered that tournament, but that had a great atmosphere around it. I think, yes, once a year.
Once a year.
Yeah.
Does feel strange. I must admit, the one in Denmark, I don't know how to put this, feels a bit more sort of family orientated, where the one in Phoenix,
yes,
it's, you know, it's people that have had a few sherbets over the course of the day.
Yes, as is the 17th Sawgrass. I mean, that's a lovely amphitheatre. I mean, it's like being inside a theatre watching what goes on there. But I think every now and again that's fine. I would like to see it every week.
One final point on the Phoenix Open. The players paid tribute to former professional golfer Jared Lyle, who passed away last year following a long battle with leukemia. The Australian, who was 36, recorded a hole-in-one at the 16th in 2011 and was honoured by tournament officials, who placed a replica of Lyle's bag and clubs next to a plaque commemorating his ace. Lyle's signature yellow bucket hat also sat on top of the bag. We saw this on television over the course of the week. Great to see all the aces, but his in particular, I think.
Wonderful. Now, I rather like the players putting the yellow hat on as well as they did. And he was such a popular figure, not just on the PGA Tour when he played down his home tour, his Australasian tour, the odd visit he had to the European Tour. Popular wherever he went. And a sad loss, and difficult for his wife with a young family. It was a horrible story because he'd gone through...
He'd beat it, I think, two or three times, hadn't he?
He had, and I think the last time, this is it. You know, onwards and upwards from there, and then, of course, it went the other way. But a very special player and a nice thing for the PGA Tour to do.
Elsewhere, Patrick Reed has been awarded honorary life membership of the European Tour in recognition of his Masters tournament victory last year. The 28-year-old is only the fourth American to receive the honour, joining Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson. If you want to learn a little bit more about Patrick Reed, you can. The European Tour website have published an article listing 10 things you probably didn't know about Captain America, including, and this is the one that I didn't know, well, amongst one or two others, but the surprising one, he entered qualifying school in Europe in 2011, failed to get beyond the final stage. So he tried to come and play here initially and didn't get it. I mean, did you know anything about him before he sort of burst onto the scene a couple of years ago?
I did. He was a teenager then. He's still a young man, Patrick Reed. He's got a long way to go in his career. It's a wonderful accolade, that European Tour honorary member. And you look who he's alongside there in Nicklaus and Palmer.
The greats of the game.
Over 30 majors between them. So a nice touch from the tour. I think a lot of that was down to how he promoted the tour when he became a member of it. He wants to still be a member of it. He wants to play all of the tournaments he needs to play to keep that membership. And having that honorary membership now is fitting, very fitting.
Well, you can head to the European Tour website for the full list of Patrick Reed facts, including one more about cowboy boots, apparently. Ewan, we need the top 10 in the world rankings.
I can certainly do that for you. Francesco Molinari, the Open champion, occupies 10th. McIlroy's still inside the top 10 at 9. And Ricky Fowler making a move, of course, with that win in Phoenix last week. He's up to 8th. Ahead of him, Xander Schauffele and John Rahm at 6th place. And then into the top 5, Bryson DeChambeau, who's getting ever closer to the number 1 position. Ahead of him, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, the 2-time major winner last year, but it's still Justin Rose, despite that miscut last week, who's out in front.
Who would be your guess at the end of 2019 to finish at the top of the world rankings?
That's a brilliant question. I'm going to go for Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson. Yeah. Do you think maybe this is the year that he gets another major? Which major do you think he might get?
Well, I look at the courses. He'll thoroughly enjoy Royal Port Rush. They have 2 new holes there that have come from the Valley course. That's a stunning layout now. That's going to be a fantastic venue. He's had a meltdown at Pebble before. He had a ginormous lead.
Yes, he did.
And
this
he lost
is the one that
lead.
Graham McDowell.
He lost that lead by the first 3 holes. So maybe not too happy memories about that. He's always going to contend at Augusta because of the distance he hits the ball. And now he's a better wedge player. I would think he's quite a good bet for that. And he will adore playing at Bethpage.
Get a lot of support there,
like,
I imagine.
That's like playing in the Red Sox. That's Philadelphia Phillies and all that stuff. That's like playing there. It's going to be noisy and it will be right up his street.
DJ, potentially to finish as world number 1 2019. You heard it here first. It's certainly going to be an interesting battle. On to this week's event now, where the innovative ISPS Handa Vic Open makes its European Tour debut. It's the only professional golf tournament in the world where men and women play on the same courses at the same time for equal prize money. The event, which is co-sanctioned between the ISPS Handa PGA Tour of Australasia and the European Tour, runs concurrently with the Women's Vic Open and features the best players from the Ladies European Tour and the ALPG. The fields play simultaneously over the beach and creek courses for the opening 2 rounds, following a cut after the opening 36 holes. The qualifying men's and women's players, that's 60 players plus ties for each event, will progress to the 3rd round on Saturday on the beach course only. And then after the 3rd round, a 2nd cut is implemented to the leading 35 players plus ties for both men and women. What I want to know is if a woman outscores, the leading woman outscores the leading man, does she get both prize money? Does she get the main title, so to speak?
No, she'll get the trophy and the cheque, which is what she will deserve if she manages to
it's
do
good,
that.
Good though, isn't it? It's going to be interesting.
Definitely. You talked about the 16th at Phoenix, and do I like that much? I like changes. I like people trying to do things differently, because our game is run on 72-hole stroke play. Straightforward stroke play over 4 days and probably always will. But to see this, I think, is wonderful. It's great for the women to tee it up alongside the men. The Ladies European Tour has got stronger over the course of the last 12 months, so this will be a special week for them. A good week for the lads as well to be playing alongside them. I think good for the game.
Bit of pressure on the men, maybe.
Definitely.
You know, they've got to make sure that know, they potentially score better than the women. But I don't think it's going to be as simple as that. Looking at one or two results from previous renewals, the women are very, very good. Do you know anything about the course or the host course, which is 13th Beach Golf Links in Victoria in Southeast Australia?
I don't. I talked to Wayne Riley, our on-course commentator throughout the European Tour season, and he says, like all the courses down there, it's a good, strong test. And there's a bit of links land in there. There's a few trees as well. Lovely mixture. So I think as far as the venue is concerned, they've got that one spot on.
Beach course is 6,796 yards par 72. The creek course, which they will play, won 6,947 yards par 72. Sounds a little bit short. One thing that when I've seen women play on PGA Tour events previously, it's not necessarily the length that is the handicap. It can be the sort of speed of the greens and the chipping and putting aspect of it. I don't know if you feel the same way, but these courses do look a little short for the men, don't they? Whether that's going to be a factor, I don't know.
Some of the best tournaments, Dan, have come on shorter courses. I thought one of the great tournaments last year was the WGC Mexico. Chapultepec, an old-fashioned style course, tree-lined fairways, lots of dog legs, Arden's off the tees. But it provided so much drama, and I suspect down there in Victoria we'll have plenty of drama over the 4 days there.
Decent field. We've got a lot of local players, obviously, and we've got a number of European Tour regulars, so to speak, that have headed off down towards Australia. I was looking at an Ollie Wilson tweet yesterday. He said, 41 hours of travel, but worth the journey. It's a long, long way, isn't it?
It certainly is. A lot of air miles, though.
There's no doubt about that. Andrew Johnson as well, I think, lost his bags in Singapore. I think he's got his clubs. But, I mean, it's fraught with danger, this international travel, Ewan, as I'm sure you're well aware.
Well, an airline managed to misplace my bag 6 times out of 8, which now, I thought was a record.
Yeah, could be. 7 European Tour winners over the course of the last 12 months are teeing up. We've got Aaron Rye, Richard McAvoy, Wade Ormsby, Paul Dunne, Junghoon Wang, Sam Brazel, Kurt Kitayama, who can hit it a long way. Who else potentially are you looking forward to watching down under this week, Ewan?
I think you're trying to get my picks.
I might be.
I think that's exactly what you're trying to do. I'm not telling you.
OK, fair enough. We've got Ryan Fox. If in my mind, if someone deserves a European Tour win, it's Ryan Fox. He went close in iron, of course, last year. Seems to be a streaky player, but he's not one on tour yet, is he?
Yeah, he's a player and a gentleman, as Cantor will be very proud of. And that win you're talking about isn't far away.
Andrew Johnson, we talked about briefly. He is not playing PGA Tour anymore. He did a couple of years ago. Right decision to concentrate on the European Tour. Shane Lowry talked about it, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago when he won. It's so difficult for these very good players, but not top, top players, to try and manage their time globally.
Well, I think if you're a top player, you look at the majors. That's the first four you look at, if you're in them. If you're in the top 50 in the world, you're going to be in these majors. I've talked about the World Golf Championship. There's another four of them. So these 8 weeks, you're playing against the very cream of professional golf. You then take the 8 Rolex series, where you have a first prize of over $1 million. Now, that takes you up to 16 events. If you add the Players' Championship in, which is normally the top 100 in the world ranking, there's 17. You take a couple in the desert swing, mm-hmm. You take a couple there, and there you are.
That's your schedule.
There's your 20. Yeah. You can now add 1, 2, 3, whatever you want to do. But there is no need to go to the States. And I've spoken to a lot of players who have been there, and they said they didn't quite like the lifestyle. Others are different. You look at the likes of Luke Donald. His wife was American, Justin Rose. Their families have settled down there. For someone like Castaño, it didn't work, eh? Castaño was, 5, 6 time winner on the European Tour before he went there, then lost his playing privileges. Now he's back in Europe. There is no need now to be looking at that PGA Tour financially and saying, I really need to be there, because you don't have to.
Let's get some predictions from you. I've tried to draw yours out, but
yeah,
you're not giving
Scott,
away. Exactly. You're not giving away. You'd be a good politician. Who are you going for this week? Now, we say one player outside of the top 50, but I would wager that the vast majority are outside of the top 50 from last year's Race to Dubai standings here. I don't know how many actually finished inside the top 50. So you've probably got a bit of a free go here, Ewan. So who do you like?
Well, I had a short list of 3. I'm going to go for a home player.
Okay.
I'm going to go for Scott Hend.
Okay.
See, I don't go for the world number ones like it.
Well, Wimbledon was not one's not playing this week, so
no. So you'll be going for the world number two.
I'll work my way down until I can find one that's playing.
Well, the dilemma I have is Kitayama, and Otegi.
Okay.
You've mentioned the length of Kitayama, which is not going to be a big deal.
No. Won in Mauritius, didn't he? Because he might get a bit blowy on this beach course as well. So, did he win in Mauritius? Yeah, he did.
He did win there. So it's either Otegi or Kitayama, and I'm going to go with Kitayama.
Okay, so Hend and Kitayama. I'm going to go for a couple of local players. My first pick is Jason Scrivener.
Oh, very good.
I'll rattle off his form figures here for you. And third, Hong Kong. Sixth, Australian PGA. 16th, Abu Dhabi. And 7th, in Dubai.
Yeah, it's just not working for him at the minute, is it?
It's not, is it? You know, he's doing something. He's doing something wrong. He's getting close, but not close enough.
Well, I'm sure by you picking him, that might bring an end to that brilliant form.
And my other selection, I'm sure you will have a word about this player, Lucas Herbert, who was very seventh good. In Dubai, had that penalty as well in Dubai as well, and has got a lot of good form over the course of the last year. Is he the next Aussie you think that might jump up into the world game?
Yes, after the penalty, the way he managed to push that to the back of his mind and reeled off half a dozen birdies in the space of 14, 15 holes. Very impressive. And he's a very impressive young lad as well. So he's got an old head on young shoulders and certainly got a very good golf game.
Well, that is your lot for now. Next week, we'll look back on matters at the Vic Open and also preview the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. But for now, from you and Murray.
Thoroughly enjoyed it, Dan.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll speak soon.